Friends, I want to share with you today
some thoughts about those who have drifted away, those who have become hostile to the faith, those who, for a variety of reasons, have found it difficult to accept the embrace of the Catholic Church. And let me get at it this way. About 5 years ago, my boss, Cardinal Francis George in Chicago, took me aside at the seminary, and he said, "I'd like to see you." Always a dangerous prospect, you know. And he said, "I'd like you to jumpstart evangelization in the Archdiocese." I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "I don't know, but I want you to do it." So, what I did was I first gave some talks around the Archdiocese to groups, you know, like yours, and trying to invite people from different areas of the church, and we talked to business leaders at some of the clubs in downtown Chicago. I think they were all good. But I said to them, "You know, Your Eminence, I can reach so many more people by means of the Internet especially." And just the time when the Internet, you know, technology is taking off, and it was a brand new thing called YouTube. This is now about 3-4 years ago. YouTube had just come into existence. I said, "What I want to try is just to make some commentaries, brief 6-7-8 minute commentaries on music or movies or books or culture, what's going on in the news, and we'll see how those go." So we tried that. I started doing these commentaries, and much to my delighted surprise, they proved to be popular. And something else I discovered was you can comment on YouTube videos. I didn't realize that at first. Well, boy, do I know it now. I've done about 160 of these now, I think, and I think we have somewhere in the ballpark of 40,000 comments have come in, 89 to 90% of which are negative. Now, I like that, by the way, because what it shows is, with this ministry, I'm reaching people who are way outside the church. I mean, a lot of the talks I've given over the years, and I'm very happy to do them, are to groups like yours, people who are in the church, involved, good Catholics. The YouTube ministry takes me far outside the reach of the Catholic Church. In fact, I'm going into the world of people that don't like religion at all. They don't like God. They don't seem to like me very much. But I can hear now from their comments, which I can engage. And, you know, I kind of enjoy that. The French have that lovely expression, joie de combat, you know, the joy of the battle. And I kind of enjoy that. I can now get into these conversations. And we've had now sometimes dozens and dozens of responses, counter-responses. I can engage people outside the church, and I've discovered, I think, what are some of the typical blocks to the faith? Because I go through these, you know, 35,000 comments, I can see very clear patterns emerging. What are the reasons that people are balking at us? Why are they saying no to the faith? So what I want to do is share with you five of these. I call them the YouTube heresies because I've discovered them on YouTube. And they're what the classic heresies often are. They're just means, they're ways that the faith gets blocked. Let me name them first, and I'll just, the talk will be going through them one by one. First of all, the first YouTube heresy, there's a great confusion out there about what we mean by God. Great confusion about God. That's number one. Secondly, there's tremendous confusion out there about biblical interpretation, what we mean by the Bible, and how to approach the Bible. Huge problem. Thirdly, there's great confusion about the relationship between religion and science. Major stumbling block for a lot of people. Fourthly, there's a great problem caused by the corruption of the church. How do we get past the fact the church seems to be corrupt in many ways? And finally, maybe the most important one, people are blocked because of the relation between religion and violence. Okay? God, interpretation of the Bible, religion and science, the church and corruption, and finally religion and violence. Those, I think, are the five greatest things that are blocking people right now in their access to the faith. Let's begin then with God. One of my theological heroes is Herbert McCabe, who was a Dominican theologian, died, I think, in 2002, not many years ago. And I've read all of McCabe's works, and I ran across a friend of his when I was in Rome last spring. And he said, here's the thing about Herbert. Herbert engaged atheists all the time. He would allow them to make their arguments as vigorously as possible. And then, almost invariably, he would say, I completely agree with you. Now, why? Because what he was discerning, and I think it's absolutely right, what the atheists are going after 9 times out of 10 is not what we mean by God. What they are attacking is not this integral, complex, rich Catholic understanding of God. Now, here's what I mean. I'll hear all the time on the YouTube forums phrases such as these. Oh, it's nice you can believe in your little sky fairy. You ever hear that one? Nice you believe in your little sky fairy. Another one is, how nice that you have your little invisible friend. See, that's God. And then my favorite, actually, and it comes up all the time, I think Richard Dawkins first coined this. You know, Dawkins, along with Christopher Hitchens, is probably the leading atheist today. He said, God is like the flying spaghetti monster. Now, you know what that means? It's just this wild concoction, the flying spaghetti monster. There's as much evidence for God as there is for this completely fantastic being. That's the point they're making. I want to go back to The Seven-Story Mountain of Thomas Merton. I'm sure many have read that. It was a book that had huge impact on me when I was a kid. I read it when I was 16. Merton said that when he first opened up a book of Catholic philosophy, he was flabbergasted. Because he never knew that people would talk about God in such a sophisticated, intellectual, and philosophical way. He said, and here's the quote from The Seven-Story Mountain, I always assumed that God was some noisy, mythological being. The flying spaghetti monster, your invisible friend, the sky fairy, right? I always assumed that God was just some crazy mythological concoction. I never knew we could talk about God in a consistent and philosophically sophisticated way. Here's what Merton saw. Thomas Aquinas said, God is not so much ens summum, that's his Latin for highest being. Rather, God, Aquinas said, is ipsum esse subsistens. That means the sheer act of being itself. Now, I know that sounds very abstract. It's not, though. Look, God is not one being among many. There's you and there's me, there's a podium, there's God, there's the trees. No, God is not one thing among many. Aquinas says, God is not in any genus. That thing is in the genus of chair. That's in the genus of microphone. I'm in the genus of humanity. God is not in any genus, which means he can't be defined. Furthermore, Aquinas said, God is not even in the genus of being. Extraordinary claim, isn't it? I mean, wouldn't you say everything in the universe is in the genus of being, whether it's the planet Jupiter or this microphone or you or me? But not God. God is not a being among many, not something we're going to find within the universe. Rather, God is that creative power of being itself in and through which all the things in the universe come to be. You know, look around this room for a second. Can you sense the architect of this place in every detail? Yeah, absolutely. You can sense the mind because the architect thought this whole place into being. But where's the architect? Is he in here? Is he any part of the building? Is he the building itself? No. So God, not a thing in the universe, but the sheer act of being itself through which the whole universe comes to be, is reflected, yes indeed, in all things, but cannot be discerned within the cosmos. I hear this all the time on the YouTube forums. Where is there evidence for God? Well, see what they're driving at. It's as though God is like Bigfoot. You know, where's the evidence? Oh, there's a footprint. There's evidence of this mythological being. Remember the Russian cosmonaut back in 1957 went up into space. He said, I looked all around, up in the heavens, and there was no God. No biblical person would ever expect you to find God by that kind of search. In the book of Exodus, Moses says to God, when they ask me your name, what shall I tell them? You see what he's asking? Which being are you? Which God are you? Lots of gods. There's a God of the mountain, God of the river, God of this country, God of that country. Which one are you? Which genus are you in? That's what he's asking. And what does God say? I am who I am. You see how Thomas Aquinas read that great biblical passage? I am who I am. I am not one thing among many that you can get your mind around, that you can classify and categorize. I am what it means to be. God, the creative architect of the whole of reality. We're not going to find scientific traces of God, physical evidence of God. Okay. Well, then is it just irrational, our belief in God? Any way to approach this whole question? Yes, indeed, I would say. But not in this crude manner. I love Thomas Aquinas' argument from contingency. I've used it often on the YouTube forums, trying to engage my atheist interlocutors, my agnostic interlocutors. Here's roughly how it goes. It begins with contingent things. It's a fancy way of saying things that don't explain themselves. Like you and me. Why are we contingent? Well, because we breathe, we eat and drink, and we have parents. Those are all signs of our contingency. We don't explain our own being. So we have to appeal to causes outside of ourselves, don't we? So we appeal to our parents. We appeal to food and drink and to oxygen. Are those contingent things? Sure they are. They've all come into being. They all are all dependent upon things outside of themselves. On and on we go. What's the one thing we can't do? We cannot simply infinitely appeal to other contingent things. Why? Because then we have not finally explained anything at all. What's 1,000,000 times zero? Still zero. If I just keep backing up, looking at more and more contingent things, I haven't explained my own existence. Aquinas says, we must come finally to some reality which is not contingent, which exists through the power of its own essence. God. What's your name? What's your name? I am who I am. To be God is to be existence itself. And so God can indeed be discovered, not as some mythological thing within the world, but God is discovered as the very ground of this contingent universe. That through which this universe, in all of its frailty and fragility, nevertheless exists. That, I think, brothers and sisters, is a good way to approach God from the Catholic perspective. Here's another argument. This one I get from a little-known theologian called Josef Ratzinger. Get his wonderful book from 1968 called The Introduction to Christianity. Still a wonderful book to read. Ratzinger says, all the sciences, physics, chemistry, psychology, any of the sciences, rest upon this fundamental assumption that being is intelligible. What that means is it can be understood. Being has some kind of form that will appeal to the mind. Now think about it, how odd it is, how kind of surprising it is. But every scientist has to assume it, that when he or she goes out to meet reality, he or she will find something that's marked by intelligibility, marked by form. Every nook and cranny of the universe can be known. What does that prove? Ratzinger says, it proves that the universe has been thought into existence.